second part of the Lawrence Hargrave Drive Oral History Compilation was recorded and edited by Frank Hymans from original interviews with 15 key persons. It follows on from part one, which examined the history of the area and the circumstances leading up to the closure of Lawrence Hargrave Drive in August 2003. The opinions expressed in the oral history interviews are those of the individuals concerned and do not necessarily represent in whole or in part the position of the New South Wales Roads and Traffic Authority. In March of 2004, the Alliance team set up to construct the two bridges, put forward their preferred option to the RTA and the community. The Alliance was made up of the RTA, the client, Barclay Molam, the construction entity, Maunsell Australia, the designers, and Coffee Geosciences, the geotechnical consultants. It was an ambitious project, an impressive balanced cantilever bridge on the southern side that would join up with a major incrementally launched bridge to the north to form a seamless structure. Once the bridge had been chosen, the budget for the project was set at $49 million and time was of the essence. The Alliance team had already begun the process of assessing the environmental factors that could influence the project. Jay Stricker is the manager of the RTA's Southern Regional Office at Wollongong since August 2003.
If we go back to the 29th of August when the Chief Executive said, this is now your region and this project in particular and the Minister's giving you 2.5 years to have the road reopened, and the Chief Executive said, you know, you've got to really have a good look at the environmental impact assessment, get cracking on it straight away so we don't have any delays. So I immediately got on to our internal environmental team and said, I want you to scour that whole length of road, the marine environment, the escarpment, the cliff line, the cliff vegetation, seabirds, everything. Go right over everything, scour it until you can tell me that there are no triggers for a significant environmental impact, or conversely that there are, and then we'll deal with how we can mitigate them or avoid them. So that's what we did.
At the time, David Corrie was one of the RTA's environment branch experts.
Early on when we were scoping the study, our ecologist came back and said, well, I didn't see too much, except the largest diamond python I've ever seen in my life, resting in a cave. He came to the conclusion that it feeds off the bats that come in and roost in the cave. He said it was a very well-fed diamond python. So I passed that message on to the constructors. I said, well, by the way, when you're down there, just be aware. There's a diamond python there, relatively harmless, unless you're a bat.
In the early stages, Coffee Geosciences carried out extensive geotechnical investigations. Michael Norman is Coffee's principal geotechnical engineer and a member of the Alliance leadership team.
First of all, we look at the regional geology, so we have a pretty good idea of the formations that we're expecting to have there. We then do some visual mapping of the faces so that we actually know where the faults are and joints are and what sequences are there. We look at historical records such as mining records, where the mine workings are. We look at all the reports that have preceded the project now. There was some seafloor mapping that was done just at the beginning of the project by other consultants. And then we use boreholes that we drilled from around the site, and we had to build up models along the whole of the project. We even used a technique similar to air photo interpretation, but it's done from a helicopter where we flew and took some high-resolution photos and built up a 3D model in the computer so that we could estimate size of boulders and the like. So it was pretty interesting, and we used some pretty innovative techniques. There were many things.